to K-drama school. I'm your host, Grace Jung. How are you, folks? If you're watching on YouTube, I'm showing you my stuffed turtle. I threw a lot of things away as I was leaving LA, but I brought this turtle with me because it's super cute and it's cuddly and brings me a lot of joy. It's like a very nice thing to hold in your hand when you're feeling like everything is falling apart all around you. Like when you can literally see with your eyes the world crumbling to pieces and life as you know it disappearing, like vanishing before your very eyes. This is like a great thing to have in your hands as you worry about whether or not that destruction will also touch this item and also your hands and your body and your face and the rest of you. And what this turtle is always assuring me of is that yes, it will. So there's your answer. Yeah, everything will disappear, everything will end. I also have this cat. It's a very, it's a strong cat. It's happy and it's got its paw up in the air with its other paw like pulled back like this. It's a very empowering pose. The tail is lifted up like this. Yeah, I got this cat at a Japanese toy store called Giant Robot in LA. And I got this at an aquarium down at Long Beach. So those are my toys for today. Today I'm gonna be talking to a dear friend of mine. Her name is Shira Roth. She is Israeli. And she is, she's a former comedian, but you know, she's a performer, of some kind, I would say even to this day. We all are, all of us are performers. Yeah, she used to be a singer, you know, she used to be a light worker healer. I think she still does that because of the work that she is in, the industry that she is in, and she works in the education and healthcare industry. She works with autistic children specifically, and she is currently living in Israel where there is currently a war happening. And so things are very real out there. And my prayer and my plea is that this war ends, that all wars end, and that everybody have peace and harmony. And well, that'll be my clown plea, because I know humanity to be incapable of doing this. But even if humanity is incapable of doing this, and even though there have been eons of human civilization where we've killed and destroyed one another out of fear and out of blame and hatred, the hope, the undying, everlasting hope that the clown has is that we shall overcome, that we shall succeed in the goals that we set. Yeah, and the clown commits to this with no, without holding back, none whatsoever, without any hesitation, the clown commits. The show I'll be discussing today is Miss Night and Day. This is a JTBC drama, and it stars two very brilliant performers. So Yi Jung-un, who you all know, she was in Parasite playing the, I guess, the house person? Like, I don't know what the appropriate term is. They would call them chipsa, like an assistant, like a house manager, yeah? The one with the husband in the basement. So she is a very talented theater and stage actress who slowly built her acting career over the years. And then she got her film break with Bong Joon-ho, initially in the film Okja. Yeah, that's a really weird Korean film that is on Netflix that Bong Joon-ho wrote and directed specifically for Netflix. This was actually Netflix's first feature film that they produced and distributed solely on the Netflix platform. Yeah. And it had a lot of issues because Weinstein was producing it, and Weinstein drove everybody crazy. So anyway, Okja is the film. It's about like this pig, hybrid pig that they invented to eat, but farmers are like taking care of them, and then a little girl like falls in love with the pig, and it's like she doesn't want to let the pig die, so she goes and rescues the pig. So Yi Jung-eun, stage actress Yi Jung-eun, played the voice of the pig in Okja. That was how she started her film career with Bong Joon-ho, and then she eventually became a very important supporting actress in the film Parasite, the Oscar winner Parasite. So Yi Jung-eun is on this show, and she's an actress that we've seen in other K-dramas, like Our Blues, for instance. What a force. Such a force in that show. And like this is something I've noticed with a lot of Korean TV dramas, but like they are not afraid to cast women who are middle-aged as the lead. Sky Castle is a good example of that. And this is another good example of that. Jung Eun-ji is the other actress who is playing the lead role, and she is somebody we know from the Reply series. She was specifically in Reply 1997. She played the high school girl who was obsessed with Pada from SES. And I really related to her on many levels because, first of all, Jung Eun-ji was born and raised in Busan, which is where I was born and first raised the first 5 years of my life. And then she also maintains her Busan Saturi, her regional dialect, throughout the show, but in life, even when I watch her in like reality shows, I remember seeing her on Running Man, and she kept her Busan dialect, her accent, and I was like, this girl's real. Like, she is very authentic and bold and genuine, and I really love her. She's also a very talented actress. She really knows how to perform. She's not self-conscientious. She knows how to commit to the moment. She really gives it her all, and that's exactly Yi Jung-eun. So Yi Jung-eun and Jung Eun-ji, they had an excellent sort of, I don't know, like they're not on camera a lot. Like in the last episode, they're on camera together. I meant, are they on camera together a lot? No. In the last episode, they are. And it's a very moving moment. I remember feeling like really emotional for some reason. I was like, why is this making me cry right now? But that was a very powerful moment. Like, how do we speak to the self, And how do we also recognize that the self is also one another? Because we're all interrelated. Every time I talk to somebody, it's like, oh, this is not just that person speaking. And this isn't just me speaking to that person. We're mirroring each other to some extent. We're mirroring each other's hang-ups. We're mirroring each other's awe, whatever it is, like anything that we have going on within us, yeah, that's what's being mirrored back. So I thought that was like a fascinating sort of way of showcasing that, like this future you, this past you, this present you, we're all one, but it's also like we're very distinct, very different. How do we apply this notion of like speaking to another version of ourselves with other human beings, other people that we come across? How can we do that? That's something that's just on my mind lately because, because I'm in a new place. I'm in a transition phase. I'm in the process of shedding things and acquiring things. And that also applies to people and relationships. So, yeah, something to think about, something to consider. And it's not an easy question. It's not an easy question to deal with, but it's nevertheless important. So I'll be talking to Shira about this show, Miss Night and Day. And Shira's a dear friend. We met in Berlin, and we just hit it off. Like, we just hit it off. I loved how weird she is and how quirky she is. I loved her, like older sister energy. She has like Eunni vibes, older sister energy. She has auntie energy. Just a dear friend, somebody that I definitely enjoy talking to because she's like a spiritually open being as well. So yeah, let's enjoy this talk with Shira Roth.
Thank you for joining me.
Well,
Have you had a good week?
I started my summer break today, this morning. It started, so.
Mazel. Yeah. Yeah.
Should I put more light? Like, can you see me well?
I think you're okay. If you want to put on more light, you
Good.
can, but you don't
Can
have
you see
to.
my cat? Can you see my cat?
I can see Zena, you and Zena. Beautiful. I love that. How is Zena?
She's sitting here looking at me.
She's like, what's Shira talking about right now?
I think she's a bit jealous
Ooh, yeah.
because like I'm talking and I'm not talking to her,
Exactly.
which is like
She wants all the attention to herself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it can be
I don't blame
positive
her.
or negative. No, I don't blame her either. I want my all
Yeah.
attention as well.
Exactly. And you know what? You deserve it. She deserves it. Hey, look what I have on my desk. Can you see?
Oh, wow.
It's a
Yeah. It looks
cat.
like a cat that's just about to scratch something.
Yeah, it's reaching for the sky.
Yay.
It's gray, like Xena.
Yeah. Xena is a star. That's for sure.
She is. She is. What does Xena
She
mean again?
Well, it's a Russian name. I did not name her. I received her with that name, but I like to call her Zen Xena. And then she's my Zen teacher.
I love that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes, animals are good teachers.
Oh yeah. And I took her in because I was scared, like really scared from like about cats.
Yes.
And the first year was hell. It was hell. But yeah, she's a really good cat to teach boundaries. Like you can pet her only if she says yes. You cannot do whatever you want with her.
Oh, yeah.
She has to agree, she has to come, like she's the one who comes for petting. You don't just reach out your hand to her because she'll go meow. So
Yes.
yeah,
Yes.
she is a great cat and I'm very thankful for her. Yeah.
Love that.
It was like a
Beautiful.
present that the universe gave me.
Yeah.
A
They were
street cat.
like,
A stray street
yeah.
cat, yeah. Why
Yes.
not?
Yes. Get this cat from the street and see what an amazing teacher she is to you about boundaries, about love, affection. Yeah.
And
Love that.
about coming over fear. Like,
Yes.
if I receive, because I asked for a gift from the universe, and that's the gift that I got. So, if the universe gave me this gift, the universe knew what it was doing. Like, I had to trust the universe for giving me the best gift ever and not saying, oh, why? Why am I like, what do I need a cat for? And more than that, this is the worst part. I'm like, okay, so I'm single. I'm turning 40. What do I need a cat for? I'm gonna be a single woman cat
Yeah.
lady. Oh no.
It's
But
like the
she's
universe
the
like,
best.
don't resist it. Don't
Yeah,
resist
I
it. It's
know.
happening. This is for you.
Absolutely. And
Yes, yes.
it's been a great journey with her. Like
Exactly.
we've been together for the last 3 years. So yeah, I'm just about to turn soon. I'll turn 43, but we've
Yeah.
been together almost for 43 years, for 3 years, and it's amazing like how much affection and how when you reduce fear, there's a new space that opens. Like the fear covers the space of actually
Yeah.
being able to be in in harmony.
And
it's not that Zina, Zina is not a cat that you lift up and, you know, like you mess around with. And
No.
Zina is a cat that teaches boundaries, but she does come and cuddle with me, and she does come and ask for pets. Well, we were talking a lot about Zina. I don't know if she deserves that much time. Of course she does. Of course you do.
But of course we do. Yes. Yes. Yeah. You know, I was right before hopping on the call with you, I was reading a book about Lilith, which we've talked about before.
Yeah.
And the book is very good at validating like a woman's uncertainty about her wildness, you know, like her gut intuition, or her natural responses, her natural reactions, her natural bodily cycles and things like that. Cause like, I think we're, and it's not just women, men get it too. And, you know, people who are non-gender binary get it too. I mean, I think that's why they choose to be non-gender binary, cause they don't want to be restricted in that way. But like, to honor the body for what it is and to honor the natural cycles for what they are, because society and the mind, like the concepts that human minds create, tend to try to restrict that or, you know, block it or pretend like it's bad or pretend like it shouldn't be that way, you know, not allowing us to just be freely as ourselves. And I was kind of thinking about that a little bit when you were talking about how like, oh, you know, you're reaching 40 and now you have a cat and it's like, I'm becoming this cat lady thing. And I feel like women are more vulnerable to that kind of negative stigmatization and like that kind of negative, like conceptualization. Like, we're made to feel ashamed for being as we are. And I'm at a point in my life where I like really don't want to give a shit, you know, like I don't want to give a shit about what people think should be. Like, I don't want to care what people think Grace should be this way, or she should be this kind of person, or professor or scholar or comedian, or, you know, it's like, I don't care about those things anymore. And with that comes some empowerment, but I also sensed it comes with a lot of like pain and conflict, you know, like inner conflict. And so I was like really relating to you when you mentioned like, oh, like I'm doing this to overcome my fear. You know, it's like you have this clear intention and yet there's this other side of like, am I becoming a cat lady? I don't want to be perceived that way. You know, it's like, so
I don't, it's just, care about being perceived that way. Like, I truly do not care. That's the great thing about, for me, about getting older is the less young that I am, the more I give shit about what other people think about me. Like,
mm-hmm.
Like as a young lady, I cared so much about everyone's opinion because I didn't have an opinion of my own. Like, I still was kind of, you know, being shaped by society. And as I grow older, I have more and more, it doesn't have to be an opinion. It can be also like fractions of thoughts, but I know more what I am or what I'm not, or I don't care if I am or not. So I like that about being old, but I was scared about becoming this cat lady, because as you said, inside of my mind, I was expecting something else from my life. I thought until I get to 40, I will definitely meet a man that I am interested in, and he's interested in me, and we will conform like a family, because that's something that I actually want. So like, of course, like, do you know what I mean? Like, it's not I was not scared that that my neighbors will say, here's the cat lady walking. Like, I don't give a shit.
Yeah.
Like, anyways, most when people see me, they conceive, like, they think that I'm something else than what I am. Anyway, so, like, I don't care.
Right, right.
But it was for me, because I was expecting from my life.
Yeah, I see.
Was sure that by the time that I'm in a certain age where my body functions are starting to, you know, tell me, time's up. I thought that I would be already, you know, like a family woman, which I want to be.
Yeah. Yeah.
It does not mean that the life that I live is not a good life. I am very, very happy to be who I am in my life. I am very lucky. And here the universe told me, you're not going to be alone.
Yeah.
Don't worry. We're going to bring you a Zen teacher into your house. How about that? And I'm like, okay, yeah, bring it on, bring it on. And they're like, you know, Shira, the universe gives you a gift. You better look after it. And I'm like, yeah, give me that gift. And then they give me a cat and I'm like, no.
Yeah, that's the cosmic joke, right? That's what, like, spiritual mystics say, like, because our conscious mind is so different from our subconscious. Our subconscious is the soul, the real intention of, like, why we enter these bodies. And our conscious mind, the ego, thinks it knows. I have a plan. This is what I want. This is how it's going to go. Yada, yada, yada. And then the soul is like, I hear you and I honor that, but I know what's best for this existence, actually. So in that regard, like, what I'm hearing is, like, you kind of surrendered. You're like, okay, yes, universe, like, yeah, let's do it. This wasn't what my conscious plan was, but you have this other thing that's happening and it is fulfilling other arenas for me that's working for me. And, you know, you calling that a gift is, like, I mean, I think that's powerful, because I remember in Berlin, like, we were doing stand up and somebody heckled me in the audience and it distracted me totally. Like, it threw me off course. Like, it derailed my whole set. I was, like, really irritated. So I was joking.
The joke was about Forrest Gump.
Yes, exactly. I had such a good memory. Yes, I was joking about Forrest Gump. And then this guy, he was just excited. He was like, yeah, like that. And he was just, like, talking back as if, you know, like, we're in a, like, as if we're having a conversation and this is not a show. And I was like, you just distracted me, you dumb fuck. Like, you know, and people laughed, but he looked so sorry, you know, like, he looked like, oh my God, like, what have I done? You know, and then like, he and I talked after the show. He was like, I'm so sorry. I was like, no, like, I'm sorry, like, we're cool. It's like, don't worry about it. It's like, it's just a joke, it's a show. And then in the green room, you were like, Grace, when the audience gives you a gift, just take it. You know, like, you were just like, just accept it. That's a gift. I was like, oh yeah, you're right. And again, the lesson there is, again, don't resist life as it unfolds. The way life is unfolding is actually perfect. What my conscious mind, what my ego decides to be, this is an inconvenience, or this is bullshit, or this shouldn't be. That is resistance. And it's like, if you want to be in the flow of life, and if you really want to honor the nature that you are as part of this earth and universe and everything as it is, then it's really to, again, treat every moment like a gift and be like, this is the unfolding of the way it is, and it has nothing to do with me. Not really.
It has nothing to do with what I wish that the paper that says Shira will look like. Like, life is a bit more into it. Yeah.
I mean, love that.
No, like, meeting you in Berlin was such a perfect Tao moment. Like, it was exactly at the right time. Like, we met in different places. There was, like, this something about you from the first moment that I felt we had a connection, and we had so many things, like common and not common. And look now, like we've been years later. I stopped doing stand up, obviously, but we're good friends, and we live in like different countries. We have different lives, but we have a strong connection, and I love that. That's both of us surrendering to what it is.
I mean,
it's great and difficult about surrendering is that you do not surrender once. You have to constantly surrender. Like, it will not be enough if you say, yes, I surrendered, that's it, why isn't it working?
Exactly.
Oh, no. You have to be in that state of accepting what is outside as part of what is inside. And kind
yes.
of being with it and not saying, but the inside said, I need to get there. But you're not there. You're right here. Yes, I was supposed to be a married woman, but I'm not.
It happens
to be that I live this life of a free woman that, you know what, I did not expect, but, or I did not like achieve to get there, but yeah, baby. I walk around
baby.
With hairs on my leg. Woo! Life is good. I lift my arms and everyone can see the natural woman I am. So.
Yeah. I love that.
Yeah.
So I love
that's
what it is. I think... You know, I mean, you were like, I think we talked about Xena for too much, but honestly, we haven't, because we agreed to meet to talk about Miss Night and Day, and there is a cat on that show, is there not?
You know what? Everything is because of that magical cat, so I felt that we did not speak about Xena enough, but I wanted to say another thing, like... We talked about Miss Night and Day, and actually we are making that happen right now. You are Miss Day, and I am Miss Night. Like it's evening, almost night here, and you are in the morning, right?
Yes. And you gave me two tarot cards in Berlin. One was the moon card, and the other was the sun card.
Oh yeah,
remember that? Yes.
Yeah. Oh, look at that closure.
Look at that.
Woo! I'll do it in the Korean way. Closure. Yay. That's you. That's me. We're doing whoop.
Beautiful. Oh, that cat on that show is so cute. It has like the little folded ears and the round face.
Tiny legs.
So short. Like, so cute.
Tiny legs. Absolutely.
Yes.
Like, ooh, absolutely
crawling around.
Beautiful cat.
Mm. Yeah. I heard that very fluffy, like it looks so cuddly and like adorable and does look mystical. I mean, and it looks friendly, like has like a, it's like orange and cream colored and so like, I don't know,
but
it's like a cat of light.
But the tail's like, the cat's tail is kind of wiggly, and with cats that's not a good sign. But
yeah, it's got a trickster element. And I was just like, I heard this recently. I heard that cats, when they look at you, they don't see you physically first. They first see your energy. So they see like your aura first. They see like, they see things that like ordinary civilians don't see with their eyes. Like cats are kind of mystical, shamanic in that way. They can see aura and energy first, and then they see everything else. Yes. So that, I think that's why, like, for so long cats were associated with like kings and priests and gods and things like that.
Well, I might be mistaken. This needs to be checked.
Okay.
I'm not sure that this is true, but
I think
that cats are the only animal that domesticated itself. That means wolves became dogs by man. Like, They joined the pack of men and then became dogs.
Yes.
Or foxes or whatever that is. But cats were the only animal that domesticated itself. And cats, like in nature, are much more silent. But because they're trying to imitate kind of maybe babies crying, meow, meow, and this sweet voice, and there's something about them. So having a cat in my house is actually having a tamed tiger or tamed kind of lion or something like that that wishes to live with me. Like the part of the process with Zina was not only me accepting her, but it was her accepting me and choosing me. So cats are amazing. Cats are very interesting. And I feel that before she sees something, she smells it. Her nose is, her ability to smell stuff is amazing. And she knows I'm coming back home before I reach the door. Like I will hear her meowing, saying, hello, where are you? Where are you? Come here. Mm-hmm. When I'm already on the steps, like up to get up to the flat. So
That is true. Like I've heard that too about cats, like choosing to go into like human beings' homes and assimilating in that way. And it's like there's always that question. It's like, well, why did they choose to do that? You know, like biologists and people who do science, they'll say, well, it's a survival thing. And you and I talked about that, about cats learning about like hearing a baby's cry and imitating it so that humans will feel affection towards it and want to feed it, want to tend to it. Like, I think their sense of adaptation, on the one hand, it might be survival to some extent, but that I'm not interested in that. My question is, what is the mystical bigger reason, the higher reason, the purpose that cats chose to do that? And yeah, I also heard like dogs can do this too. Animals are very sensitive to understanding their family's rhythms. So my dog, I didn't know this, but this was my first dog, my family's first dog. He's dead, unfortunately. But my mom said he could hear my dad driving like from around, like far away off the street. Like he could hear the car driving coming through and then the dog will get excited, not even on the driver, like from the street coming through. So that means animals are sensitive even to how they operate machinery, how they walk, how they move. And there's something so intimate about that. Like they are engaged in our dance, you know, they are sensitive to our rhythm and motions and movements. It's so like beautiful in a way.
And they do bring a lot of magic into our world.
Yes. Yeah.
And in Miss Day and Miss Night, like she actually brings magic into this woman's world.
Literally. Like, I mean, literally. Literally, yeah. Like,
although in the shamanic Indian tradition, the animal that brings magic into your world is crow. But this time it was a cat.
It was a cute little kitty cat. Yeah. And I was just like, first of all, I was wondering, what is it about this show that's like speaking to you? Like, what was it that you were like, oh, this show is interesting to me? What was the hook?
Well, talking about cosmic timing, okay? So I heard a few weeks ago, a bit over, I don't know, but when I started seeing the show, it was because I was injured at home. My back went. Like I lifted something which was too heavy for me to lift in a bad way. And my back went and I couldn't move. I was stuck at and I'm stuck at home. Zina will not make my food. So I had to, you know, get myself somehow. But like I was at home for like 2 weeks. Trying to just get myself back. And that was a perfect time to catch on to this show. And I felt just like that woman that is partly young and partly old. Here I hurt my back and I'm 60 years old now. I can't move. And I feel, and I feel old because I'm using a stick to just get up and move and walk. And I'm like, oh my God, I'm so old in a young body.
Yeah.
But you know what? I feel that that's something that I actually feel in most of my life, that I was always this old soul in this young body. And that there is this, how can we say that? That there's this part of me that if I talk to the young people my age, they won't see. But if I talk to an older person, they'll like, okay, eye level, but they won't see the youngness inside of me. So I enjoyed that. That was interesting. Also, you know, I was thinking about it. You mentioned Berlin. In Berlin, I had my day life and my night life. And my day life was working, looking after babies of other people, being a nanny, and then, you know, like just a simple person. And then suddenly, at one point of the day, I change my clothes, I put something on me, and I go out, and I'm a whole different person. And I have my nightlife. And that was quite interesting as an experience, having like more than one life in one go.
Did you have an orange sweatshirt or sweater when you were in Berlin?
No, it was a onesie.
The orange onesie.
Onesie, which I wear and perform in, and I love
it. I met you in that onesie. I was like, I will never forget this color. Such a great color.
Comedians gave me the same joke, telling me that I just look like I broke off prison with this orange onesie.
I was thinking like a pumpkin, you know, like it's such a right, it's a fun color. It's a perfect clown color. Like clowns will usually do like white or red, but like orange is like very, it's like so bright and energetic and loud and fun, you know, and it's perfect for the stage. That's the thing.
I did not
have to
wear makeup. All I had to do is just put that orange onesie and I'm done. That's it.
Yes.
Done.
So simple. Perfect. It's like the perfect clown nose. The perfect red clown nose, but it's a onesie. Beautiful. And it's a great color because it's like sacral chakra, right? Like the second chakra. Creativity, feeling, knowing yourself. That's a big one, expressing and knowing yourself, like getting in touch with your body. And that cat in the show was orange. And I remember the character, like when she's the young person, she's so frustrated and she's crying and she's like, I did everything right. You know, I did all the tests. I studied, I worked hard. Why am I not getting this job? Why am I not getting employed? And it's such a common grievance that young people have at that age. You know, I could relate to it on so many levels from so many different parts of my life, you know, over and over again. I think that's the gift of being a creative person is that, you know, job precarity is like always there, or just like a mystical person, or, you know, a person who's just like saying to life, okay, stability is an illusion. There will never be such a thing. I will always have to figure things out. I will always have to be on my toes, you know? But this young lady on the show, she was like, I've had enough, you know, I'm so tired. And then the next day, it's like, now you're an old lady. Now you're really tired. Now you're physically old and tired. Now, like all the things that you don't want, they're all happening. What are you going to do about it? What are you going to do about it? And then, yeah. And then that's when her life really starts to happen. It's like, oh, I can't sit around and dick around. Like, the life force is forcing me to make moves. I have to go out and do something, even if I have to lie, you know, even if I have to do weird things, even if I have to live this double life, I still have to do it. And then she goes through it and then she gets everything she wants. You know, she gets a boyfriend, she gets a job, she, you know. I was also thinking about like timeline too. Like, what did you think in terms of like the present self and the future self? I was kind of thinking in regards to that too.
What do you mean by that?
Like, I felt like maybe the older her, when she's daytime, like that's that young lady's like future self visiting her, like in the present. So you're going to embody this at one point, but try embodying it now. See how it works for you, you know? And yeah, I thought that was interesting. Yeah, yeah. What about you? Do you like believe in like the future self speaking to you at times? Do you have things like that?
Oh, yeah. The future self told me to stop doing stand-up. So I did. Like, you know, I relate to what you were saying about I did everything right. Okay, I had like really good funny material and did everything right. And yeah. I was, you know, starting to get it and working out and everything was cool. But like I felt that I was not there. Why am I not working in comedy? Why am I, you know, in this constant, why am I not getting a spot on that person's show? It was like constant, why not? It's a constant fight with the universe of I'm doing everything right. Why am I not getting this?
And, right.
Well, I had this mushroom trip, and this mushroom trip told me this, I don't know, time travel. I'm not sure about that, but it was my future self said to me, you're going to stop doing stand-up and you're going to go back to living in Israel. Like I was living in Berlin. I had my show. I had stuff going on for me, but universe said to me, and maybe my future self said to me, that I will not be willing to live with that future self if I carry on in this path. Mm. And I better make that change because my future self knows that I want something else in my life. And mm-hmm. I came back to Israel, started working with autistic people. Mm-hmm. People on the autistic spectrum is the way to say that. Mm-hmm. And then in the last few years, working with toddlers, which are on the autistic spectrum. And out of nowhere, university came to me and I started to study for my degree, like for education, and I'm gonna become a kindergarten teacher. So this is this is the future self telling me you're on the wrong path, pick another. Mm-hmm. If you want to see this good future self, pick another path. So I did.
Mm-hmm. yeah
and I feel that for this woman as well, like she, this young lady, well, she's not really young. She's not in her 20s. And that's why she's so upset, because she's saying like, I've wasted 10 years. I'm about to be in my 30s. I'm becoming old and it's not working out. And then her future self says to her, no, you have to take things, like there's things that you have to fix about yourself.
Mm.
Like you have to manage it differently. You have to start cleaning. You have to start cleaning.
Yeah.
After you clean, something else will open up and you'll find what's the next step.
Yeah.
You have to start cleaning.
And it's interesting you call it cleaning, because she literally became a cleaning lady initially. Yeah. That was her first job. And then like as a cleaning lady, when she rescued that guy from the acid attack, like that's when things started moving. But it's like she had to first be a cleaning lady in order to be in that position, to be in that place in the first place. So cleaning is such a good word for that. Yeah.
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 You had to take
Here's an available job.
Yeah.
That's
not what her ego told her. You need to be A. You need to be D.
Yeah.
No, you're gonna be C, cleaning, or is that in?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Go with the flow. Like we've selected things for you. Go and pick up the pieces and go with the flow. As I was leaving LA, like, you know, I think there's some parallels to what you were experiencing in Berlin too. Like as I was leaving LA, and I remember just like trying to hold it together, but it's like when your survival mode kicks in, oh, like the body takes over. The body fully took over. Like no matter how much I was trying to use my mind and my words to psych myself up, it's like, no, the body's in survival mode and it will do whatever it needs to get you out of this situation. And just, I was like, okay, so let me just say yes to that then. Because I was resisting it very much. I was like, I mean, I can't give this up. I can't give up everything I built here and now. And it's like, no, we're giving it up for you. We're taking it away, actually. Like, I threw away so much of my life there. And I was just like horrified by it. You know, it's like Job. It's like the book of Job. Like, these are the things that you got. And man, does the Almighty take it away. All gone. All gone. Everything's dead. Everything is gone, you know? And I was like, all right, cleaning it out. Yeah. Cleaning it out. But also reminding me, this was the big lesson in there, reminding me, none of this was yours in the first place, Grace. Such a excellent lesson for me. You did not, none of this was yours. You didn't own any of, yeah, okay, you worked and you bought something and it's in your house. You think that's yours, baby? No, none of this belongs to you. And it was just like, let me show you how hard I can go. And it just brought me to my knees in like a way that I was like a baby, you know, so helpless to the whole thing. And it was like, it was actually beautiful. Yeah. I was like, can I like survive this? Like, am I gonna be alive after this? And then like, I am, you know? And I was like, I don't know what it was that I was thinking or feeling, because I was just kind of like zoned out and just watching life happen, like, because it was so fast. This was like May, June, like left LA, drove across country back to New York, stayed with my parents for 3 weeks dealing with that shit, moving to Madison from New York driving, and then like going out and buying furniture and new appliances. And I just felt such a heaviness in my heart when I'm like buying shit that I just threw out, you know, like seeing the absurdity of it, like the human waste of it all, and the just the ridiculousness of it all, and how out of my hands it all is, and yet my hands are the ones that are doing it. And like, I'm still in it, you know, like I can't say that this is challenging. It's more just like, I'm in a certain kind of like transitional portal sphere at the moment. Yeah. And, you know, this is why like mystics say suffering is grace, you know, because they're like, when you're suffering, you are the closest to God. You are the closest to really letting it go and letting it happen. And all the lessons are coming in so easily and smoothly because I'm out of the way. Because I'm just like, I can't even deal with this shit. It's too much. And so I'm just out of the way. And then like the lessons are happening and I'm just reading the scrolls kind of thing. So
yeah.
I understand. Like, yeah, I relate to your experience in Berlin and your transition back to, you know, Israel and picking up the pieces there. And like, I feel like I understand. And of course, I've gone through this before. I have gone through aspects of this before. Like, I've lived in New York and Seoul and Berlin and LA. Like, I've gone through this many times, but each time it's so radically new. It's the same kind of steps, but it's radically new. there are some reminders, but there are also new lessons. And I get to examine where I'm at, how I'm taking it all, you know? So my mantra has been, I belong wherever I am. Like, that's what I've been saying to myself for the last 2 months. That's nice. I belong wherever I am. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. When I came back to Israel, it was really, really tough. Like, it was, I was still, like, Berlin affected me so much. I came back and people were telling me that my accent has changed. Like, I dressed like a Berliner, where no one else dressed like a Berliner. And I was the weirdo on the bus. So I was many times, I mean, Berlin has this really high fashion of looking like a homeless. And that's what people thought that I was walking here in Beersheba city, homeless. And I was homeless in a certain way. Like, I did not know where my home is.
Yeah. And
going back, returning to home, like, I'm not talking about the house home, but home inside of me is such a difficult path to walk, because you are constantly letting go of what your mind is telling you that home is. And I had to just be there and be silent, like, not even answer back to people, including my family, that some of them said, like, horrific stuff to me. Horrific stuff. And I'm just there and I'm hearing it and I'm observing it, but I'm saying, Shira, like, this is them speaking. Don't, this is not you. It's like, okay, let them just express themselves and give time. Mm. Let the time show what, how it will unfold and how, what differences will happen. And it is a really tough route to walk on, but
yeah.
It is liberating. It is really liberating, because when you stop following that, you know, shopping list that you have of who is a happy Shira, she needs to be A, B, C, D.
Yes.
And I actually am there in the morning. And even if it's a tough day, I look in the mirror and I'm smiling. And I say to myself a mantra, just for today. I am letting go of anger. And just for today, I'm letting go of fear. And just for today, I'm going to do my work in integrity. And just for today, I am thankful for everything that I have in my life. And just for today, I will be in compassion for every living creature. I will respect my parents, my friends, and everyone that I know. And that mantra, like, you know, saying it again and again and again, it kind of gives me that home. This is my place. I'm not detached. No, I am attached to that, to just for today. And that's really so important. Like, I'm going back to the series, okay? Because we're talking about Korean series. And in the end, when she gets to that point where she's done everything, she told her parents accepted her for being this old woman.
Yeah.
Everyone, like, knows that there's something missing there. And she doesn't know what to do anymore. And she's like, okay, I'm letting go. I'm starting again.
And
nothing really external changes her. It is something in that magic, that very little moment and it also has these kind of bells, ding, 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 ding. And she's done.
Exactly. Yeah. That was the thing that she had to do, though. It was like to let her mother know, I was trying to satisfy your preference on how to live. That's why it wasn't working. And then this boyfriend of hers is like, I wish you would do something you love. You know, I wish you would do whatever that might be, whether you go to school or choose a job or whatever it is, I wish you would go do something you love. And that's the big difference, is like, at any point we can choose to be motivated by fear or motivated by love, right? That's like the constant moment by moment
choice. Most people are motivated by fear. Like, the people that I see around are constantly in the chase of more money, of more cars, more stuff. And that's such a shame, because, you know, like, they'll grow old one day and they will ask, where did my life go to?
Right.
Like, what did I spend it on?
Yeah.
And we should actually spend it on ourselves, and the contacts and the communications that we have in our lives, our attachments in life, like the people that we love, or maybe loving the people that are around us, not only the, like, accepting whoever that's around us. Buddhism says that, like, who are your friends? Anyone that I meet.
Literally everybody.
Like, whoever that I see is my friend. My enemy, he's my friend.
Also a friend.
Yeah.
Also a teacher. So, yeah.
I agree. Like, finding that place of not putting it on her mother. Like, it's not because you, like, blaming her. Because of you, I didn't do it.
Yeah.
No. I took it upon myself to become what I thought you think I should be. And I'm letting it go.
Yeah.
I am who I am.
Yeah.
Which is good.
Breaking free of that. It is. And her mother needed to hear it. That's the other thing, is like, she was afraid to tell the truth for fear of hurting her mother, because her mother suffered this loss. You know, she lost her sister and couldn't let it go. And she was trying to protect her mother in some ways. But it's like, girl, you need to speak your truth no matter what the impact might be on them. Because if you keep this in, it's going to kill you. Like, it's gonna turn you into an old lady. And you know, I think that's a big thing, like, finding yourself, finding your truth, claiming your power, and braving that part. Is like, we all know this. Like, I know this to my core. Like, when I hurt somebody I love, I'm hurting myself. I know that to the core. It's not even somebody I love. When I hurt anybody, I'm also equivaling her, because we're all one, right? As we know, everybody and everything is one. So it's understanding that, like, it's still part of the dance. My self-preservation and self-love must also be part of the equation. My expression, my truth must also be part of the equation. And that's such a hard lesson for people to swallow, especially young women. Like, I remember I could never say no or express my truth. Even if I sound like confident and I sound as if, like, oh, Grace is pretty rough around the edges. Like, I get that people are like, oh, Grace is intimidating, but they don't know me. Like, I'm so sensitive, and I try my best not to say or do things that might cause injury, because I'm afraid of how it will affect me. But if I suppress my truth and my honesty, that's the biggest sin of all. So, like, I love this. Honestly, it took me a while to warm up to this show. I was like, I don't know if this is for me. But as when the old lady got the job in the lawyer's office, that's when I was like, okay, now I'm on board, because this is crazy. Like, how is she gonna manage this, you know?
Yeah.
Like, there were so many things about the show that I had issues with. Like, that actress, I love that actress, the young actress, she's great. But
she was the lawyer on the autistic spectrum.
Attorney Wu? That's not her. That's not her. No. Totally different actress.
I'm sorry.
It's okay. You're not racist, like, but very, very, very different actress. This young actress, she was in a show called Reply 1997. She used to be a K-pop star, and then she did the show Reply 1997. And oh, she comes from... Diva?
Was she the singer in the show Diva?
No, that was the same actress from Attorney Woo.
Oh my god, that's... I'm getting this wrong.
So she was on a show called Reply 1997, and that show was very successful. It was like nobody expected the show to be successful, but it was a huge hit. And she's also a very unlikely star. She has this regional dialect that is the same as my family's dialects from Gyeongsangnam-do. It's from the southeast part of Korea. And it's a very hard dialect. You sound like a thug or a gangster. Like, it's very rough. Yeah. And she... Yeah, but she never lost the dialect. Usually a lot of stars will like adopt the Seoul dialect, which is like smoother, sounds more proper. It's like German, you know, they have proper German, high German. They have that in Korea too. Like, oh, you don't want to sound like a country girl, so you want to like sound like a Seoul person. So they adopt a dialect. She never did that. And I always respected this performer for preserving herself as she is and presenting herself as she is, and being like, there's nothing for me to be ashamed of. This is the way I speak. I like it. And she got this role and she's still working. And the older actress, of course, she was in Parasite. She was in Our Blues. Like, what a tremendous actress she is. Like,
amazing.
And again, an unlikely lead. Like in a lot of TV shows, they don't give a leading role to a woman of that age, of that stature, of that. They don't. And she got it. And oh my God, like, she's such an amazing performer. But my issue is the lawyer guy, her love interest.
Oh, he's so weird.
I am so not attracted to him. Like, he's been in show business forever. I don't know why they keep casting him. He's not attractive. Like, he's not charming. He doesn't seem human.
Very cold about him. Like, even in the end, when you can see him smiling, it's so awkward.
So awkward.
And you're like, I'm not sure that I wanted to see you smile. There's something not genuine about him. Although the one that is that works with him in the office.
Yeah. Yeah.
What is it? I don't know. Like, eventually becomes her cousin's boyfriend. Like, he's so colorful. And that's something that I like usually in Korean TV, is that the acting is very colorful. Like, it's very different than any other kind of acting. Absolutely. It took me a while to understand the Korean TV, like, to enjoy that subtle kind of colorfulness in their acting. Like,
yes.
I can't even explain it, but it's different from what I'm used to. And
the
facials and being in it, and it's like between Bollywood and Japanese like strict acting, somewhere in the middle. But I don't know if that's true.
Yeah,
there's something special about it. And this dude is not a Korean actor. Like, he's so cool. He looks Japanese. Like, I've seen Japanese TV, and they're very, like, you know, strict and cold and preserved and not showing anything on their faces. And he's like constantly like angry with himself and the world. And And you're like,
There's something blocked. There's a blockage in him. It's very, very stoic. Yeah. And so different from the female characters, his opposite leads, because they are so authentically expressive and loud and have personality.
Maybe to have this ice prince,
ice prince
that likes the common girl and finds her unresistible eventually. And old lady. So maybe
I'm happy that you understand or you relate to my feelings about the the male actor on this show.
Very awkward to see him smile.
Very off.
I have a friend that watches that I put her on Korean TV. I have a friend that we opened up the community garden together here in my neighborhood.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I told her like a year and a half ago that I'm really hooked on Korean TV, and she said to me, "What are you doing with Korean TV?" And then eventually she started watching Korean TV. So now we have a lot to talk about. And
yes.
So I'm crying here. Hello to Renata. Maybe she'll hear this. And she and I were texting to each other. She recommended me to watch this show. And when we both saw his smile in the end, it was like, oh, too awkward. This is not a good TV moment.
Yeah. And you know, we've met human beings like that, like in the world. I've met people like that in the world. And when I'm around them, I just don't know what to do. I feel so uncomfortable, like, and so self-conscious. But I think that's the lesson. It's like, when you meet people like this, see how you react. And it's like, I find myself suddenly very self-aware, you know? It's interesting,
yes,
but
okay. You do get self-aware. I can tell you that in the world in the field that I work in, which is autism, there's many moments like that where there's something in the social interaction which is not as you're used to, or maybe is socially accepted. And someone might smile in the wrong moment, or someone might not even smile, and like the interaction is different. So I know what you're talking about. Awkward. And being self-aware is actually a good thing to be.
Exactly.
Exactly. Means that you're not judging anyone, not the person in front of you, and not how you are reacting to this. And you're not reacting out of this automatical kind of way of, I'm supposed to do A, B, C. No. You're taking a moment and seeing what can happen.
Yeah. I love that. And that is literally it. It's like, it's just self-awareness. You're becoming aware and you're coming out of this moment. This is a different style of living. This is a different moment. This is a different vibration, different frequency. It's different from what you're used to. And there are moments that we need that. We need the reset. It's like a nice reset button. And those are the kinds of people who do that for us. But I want to do something with you, and then we'll close up. You used to do this when you used to host at Dead End Comedy Show.
I play this
game.
Okay.
I do it with most of my comedian guests, and even though you're not a comedian anymore, you still are to me. And I just ask you, what would you do if you were in this situation as this person? So it's an improv game, all right? So I'll give you the question, you can answer, all right? So let's say you are this young lady, okay? You're the girl, you're Mijin, and you wake up one morning and you're in like a 50-something-year-old, 60-year-old woman's body. What do you do?
Oh my God.
And your parents are outside. They're knocking on the door. You hide?
Like her response of going underneath the covers was such a strong response, and freaking out, like looking in the mirror, and I'm like, oh my God, is this me? And let's see. What would I do as an old lady suddenly? I think I would start baking.
Okay. Let's say
knitting, making myself a sweater.
Oh, okay. So you would do all the stereotypical old lady things. Exactly. You're like, all right.
Okay.
This is me now. Okay. Got it. All right. Well, let's say you're the dad, okay? You open the door. You're expecting your 20-something-year-old daughter to be in a room, but there's an old woman there, and she keeps yelling, like, I am your daughter. I am your daughter. Okay. And you're the dad.
I would feel sexually arrested. Like, what's going on? This is weird. Like, why are you onto me? I'm married happily. I have nothing to do with you. And this would be weird because she is his daughter, and this is a bit, you know, awkward and dark, but it would be like a weird one.
That's crazy. Okay. I never would have expected that answer. Okay. All right. We're in this. Okay. Let's say now you're that young, like, K-pop star dude, security guard guy. Okay.
Oh yeah.
The handsome boy, the pretty boy. And let's say your friend, who you know as a young woman, right before your eyes, you see her transform into this older woman, and she's riding your bike, and I mean her bike, and she's like, it happened right before your eyes. Like, you know this young woman as your friend, but your friend just turned into an old lady in an instant, right in front of your eyes. What do you do?
I call my drug dealer and ask him for another dose. Like, no way this happened. What's going on? Like, how? Another option is I would definitely check if there's a way to do that myself. Like, can I transition that way?
Oh,
can I do the jump? I think that the most interesting part of the story is him when he is in love with her and he doesn't care if she's old, because it has nothing to do about her age. It's the way that she is behaving to him that opens his heart.
Yeah.
Like, he does not care. He wants to buy her coffee anyways. And when he finds out that she's a young woman, he says, maybe this can actually be something. But that's an interesting one. I was actually,
it really was,
he has no girlfriend. Like, I was hoping in the middle of the show that her friend would become his partner, because obviously the girl is meant to be with a prosecutor, but like, I was really sad to see that he only wrote more music about it and it only became a memory for him. And that there was no love for him. That was sad. Maybe it's a, like, a small thing saying, don't become famous, you will be very lonely.
I kind of read it as like, when a person decides to love somebody or when they are in love with them, there's no reason or rhyme. It's just, I just love you because I love you, and that's it. And then it was like, oh, you don't love me back? That doesn't matter. I just love you because I love you. And he fully owned it. And how does a person express their love? Usually through creativity. And that's what he did. He executed it, you know? And so it's like giving himself that love. That love was coming back to him in some rewarding way. So I kind of really admired that character too, for being so bold and brave in how he was loving and expressing himself. But yeah, I agree with you. He's such an interesting character. And
can I talk about another character that I really wanted to talk about?
Yeah.
The murderer. Like the murderer herself.
Yes. Okay. Yes.
Like, I've seen her in other shows as well. And she's usually this uptight mother. And it was quite interesting to see her as this crazy lady. And I have to say, my friend Renata knew it was her in the middle. I'm like, how? How did you know? Like, how did you figure that out, that she's her? Mm-hmm. And I don't know.
What show are you talking about? What show was she an uptight mother in? I'm just asking to make sure that she's the right actress.
Oh, maybe I'm fucking this up again. Okay, let's take that assumption away. But she was acting crazy.
Yeah, this was different for her.
In the beginning, she was this annoying woman at work where she's just letting other people do her job, which is kind of annoying.
Yeah.
And maybe that was the tale of why she's not worth, you know, being a good person. It's because she's shitty.
Mm.
And then seeing her kind of, you know, being her full self, crazy lady.
Yeah.
Obsessed and crazy and after money and after bullshit stuff and just knocking, like killing whoever that's stepping in her path. That was
out of bitterness. Wow. out of resentment, like taking out her resentment on others by taking their lives, by killing people. I mean,
she did not accept the universe's gift.
Ganao. that's a definite Ganao. Okay, well, all right, final question. Let's say you are the prosecutor, the stoic, weirdo, awkward prosecutor guy, all right?
Yeah.
Let's say you see this young woman who's your girlfriend. Let's say you see her transform as the old lady right before your eyes. Yeah. What do you do?
Wow. I don't know. This is a tough one because he doesn't have a lot of like.
Yeah, but if you were him, right? If you were him, and you saw this is your girlfriend, you love her,
you know,
and
way,
you want to protect
way,
her. Yeah,
it's an opening to see how your wife will look in the future.
Like, oh yeah,
this is her in 30 years' time. This is how she's gonna be. Like, accept it. Don't expect her to be thin, smooth, and this is how she's gonna be. A bit kind of, you know, in a different form. This is how she's gonna look like after a few children. Like, exactly.
Yeah.
This is the future.
Yeah, and yeah, yeah.
By the way, you yourself will not look so awesome either. So.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Accept it.
Oh, okay. Yeah. It's a reminder.
In a way, like when I look at my mother, I mean, I'm not this bit of my mother, but I look kind of like her. When I see her, I'm like, okay, that's how I'm gonna look like. When I'm in my 70s, like. Prepare, Shira, prepare. This is how you're going to look like.
Yeah. Yeah. I have that same moment too. Like, I think that's the gift of having a mother and a grandmother and like women relatives. It's like we look at them and we see our future. It's like, I'm prepared. I'm prepared to embody this. Thank you for doing this, and I appreciate you, and I love you, and I'm so happy that we had this time together. Thank you.
I love you, Gracie.